guys. Welcome to another episode of Psychic Babes. I'm your host, Kirsten Sandifer. I'm really, really excited tonight to have this guest on today. I think you guys are really going to love this episode. You're in for a real treat. For my regular listeners, you guys all know I'm have a bit of an interest in ETs or higher intelligence beings. So I have asked Michael Panicello, the MUFON Connecticut State Director, to join us. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, well, thanks
talk with you and your guests and your members.
Thank you. Yeah, and for those of you who don't know what MUFON is, the MUFON UFO Network, it's a U.S.-based nonprofit organization that's really composed of civilian volunteers who study, you know, alleged UFO sightings. And it's one of the oldest and largest organizations of its kind, really. I mean, what, you guys have more than 4,000 members worldwide now, is that right?
About that, yes.
Yeah, and representatives in more than 43 countries and in 50, you know, in all the 50 states. So it's really interesting, and they've got a lot of new things going on, and we're just really excited to have him on. So I will turn it over to Michael. He can tell us a little bit about himself and how he got interested in MUFON, and maybe what he did before then, and how his interest in aliens led him here.
Okay. So I got involved with MUFON because I was looking to expand my knowledge of UFOs and extraterrestrials and the whole field of ufology, really. I've always liked it. My interest kind of started with the X-Files, as probably the case with so many people when I was younger. And with the storylines of the X-Files. But not only that, when I was a kid, you know, the Learning Channel was still very popular before it became like a reality channel that it is now. And they had documentaries on about Area 51 and, you know, always they talked about aliens.
Yeah.
And how the technology from the alien crafts eventually wound up in some of our military applications.
Mm-hmm.
And I just found that fascinating when I was younger.
Yeah.
And as I got older, I just lost interest because I had no time for it. I was going to college, then I was going to grad school, and then I was getting involved with work and realities of adulthood. And I just kind of put the hobby aside, the interest aside, and until I finally got established in my field. I finished school, I got my job, and I realized, well, gee, I got all this free time. Let me go back to ufology. Let me go back to this field, because it was always in the back of my head and it's something I enjoyed talking about. It's just I never had time to focus on it. And
right.
Now I did. So I remember in one of the episodes I was watching on the Learning Channel about the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON, and how they are well-respected in the field. They've been around for a very long time. And on a whim, I looked up on their website if there was anything in Connecticut. And sure enough, there was a chapter. So I reached out to the state director at the time, and I asked him if I could attend one of their meetings. And they said, sure, you can absolutely attend. And I met some of the members, and I just fit in. I found my niche. And so I stayed, and I became a field investigator because they investigate the sightings. And I figured if something's going to happen in Connecticut, I want to know about it. And the best way to do that would be as a field investigator. So I became a field investigator, and then I just worked my way up and became state director. And I've been doing it ever since.
So how long have you been working for them now?
I've been the state director since 2013, and I joined MUFON probably the spring of 2011.
Okay.
So it's a long time. It's been, it feels like a lifetime now. I mean, but
yeah,
time goes so fast. It doesn't feel like it's been that long a period of time, but it has been. It's been since at least 2011. So.
Well, I bet we'll get into this later, but I bet you have some really interesting stories to tell us. But do you feel like the trend now is leading more to, leading to more alien abductions or less?
That's a good question. I think the trend now is sightings are going up. I mean, sightings seem to be more common. People are more aware of it now.
Yeah.
As for alien abductions, I think that's always been a tough one to gauge because a lot of people are being abducted, but they're not reporting it yet. They're either afraid to report it. They don't want to talk about it.
Or don't really know exactly what happened. So
they don't understand it. Yeah. So what happens is you get two kinds of abductions. And this, I think, makes it a little bit hard to figure out the trend. You have the ones that are going on that are never reporting it. So now you're not getting any of those statistics in the system. Or you're getting people that are reporting stuff years down the road. You know, it takes them a while to come to terms with what happened to them. So when they do come to terms with them, it happens a little bit in the future. But because people report at all different times, you're putting them back. So, you know, for example, let me give you an example. If someone got abducted in 2009 and they're reporting it now in 2019, we can put that statistic back in 2009, but we don't know if other people were abducted in 2009 because they haven't reported it yet. So our numbers are always off because...
Okay.
So sure. If that makes sense, I don't know if I explained it well.
No, that does. So basically, the sooner somebody reports it, it's easier for you to kind of make sense of what happened and right. Check the facts.
Yeah, I mean, anytime someone talks to me, and whether it's an abduction or mm-hmm. whether it is an actual UFO sighting, mm-hmm. they say, should I report it? I'm not sure what I say. I say, absolutely report it. Because as soon as you report it, that information goes into our database. It becomes another data point. You know, as a scientist would say, they want more data. The more right. data points you have, the better you can see the patterns and the trends. So one person reporting, yes, it's one person, but that's one person among many reporting. And all of a sudden, those data points start adding up. And then you can see patterns. And so that is really
that's a very good point that you make, Michael. I mean, I think our listeners should definitely hear that. You know, guys, if you happen to see what you think is a UFO, even if you don't necessarily know, report it anyways and just, you know, get that out there. And that way they can investigate it and figure out more about, you know, what was really going on. But yeah. I think people tend to try, you know, they feel silly, like, oh, well, maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I didn't really see what I thought I saw, you know, and they tend to second guess themselves. So then they just lean towards not reporting it.
And that happens. But, you know, you're reporting to people that believe already. We're not going to ridicule you. That's not the way MUFON works. We take what we do very seriously. Even though we're volunteers, we're not going to mock you. That's just not in our creed. But if you're worried about, like, oh, I'm reporting something and I'm thinking it's a UFO, I'm thinking it's not, well, we'll tell you what we think. I mean, we'll give you an honest assessment. We're not going to, you know, lie to you and say, yes, that's a UFO when it was really an aircraft. If we can prove that it was an aircraft, we'll tell you that. But we're going to respect you and your opinion and what you saw and what you feel. And we're going to be more open to believing you. So if you're worried about, oh, well, he's just going to laugh at me. Well, no, because we believe too. I mean, we wouldn't be in this field if we weren't looking for that. So you're reporting your sighting to like-minded people.
And yeah. No, make
you feel comfortable.
I read Sherry Wilde's book too. And she just talks about how compassionate you guys were, you know, with her story. And I've heard that from other people as well who've spoken with you guys, that these guys are very, very compassionate, understanding, and they don't, you know, they go above and beyond to make you feel normal. And, you know, because this isn't something that is people's fault, and they forget that. It's, you know, and I've heard that everybody from MUFON is very, very kind in the way that they do their work, and they do it, they're volunteers. So you have to think there's something about this that they enjoy and they truly want to help people. So yeah. What is MUFON's stance per se? Because I'm on their site quite a bit. But it seems like, yes, you know, we believe 100% that aliens exist, but they don't really go into, yes, and here's the proof. So I'm just wondering kind of what is their stance on it? And why haven't they come forward to challenge the government, I guess, and say, look, you guys are not, you know, not disclosing this stuff. What's going on?
MUFON's national policy regarding that, it's a great question. You probably want to talk to someone from National on that. My understanding is they're trying to make more of a stance by going and showing the cases of interest. If you go on our website now,
Yes, yeah. You
can see the top 10 cases. We have a science review board that will look at all the cases, and the most credible cases they'll post online. If you are a member and you join, you get a monthly newsletter, a whole journal, which is very well done.
You get to read the detailed version of the top 10 of the year, which is really interesting. So I encourage you guys to do that because I signed up for it.
And they have articles by people. They do their best for disclosure as they can. The MUFON symposium is coming up at the end of this month. They're going to have speakers there to talk about disclosure. I mean, a few years ago, they had one on the secret space program. They have one on USOs. They do the best they can within the confines of their abilities. And I think they do a fair and honest job. I mean,
they do. Yeah.
You can go online and you can find haters on both sides for anything. And unfortunately, that's the case with ufology. But I think MUFON on a whole tries to be as transparent as they can to show that. And, you know, maybe in the past they weren't always so, but this new leadership that's involved now, they're very much dedicated to trying to get that out there, which is why there's, you know, they're trying more. They tried Hangar One, for example. And, you know, when we had Hangar One on the History Channel, mm-hmm. Our sighting reports went out the window. I mean, we had more people reporting than you can imagine, and that just helped tremendously getting the data in to show that. Members can look at the CMS system, the public version of the cases. They can't see anything confidential like witness information or witness addresses, but they can read about witnesses' sightings. UFO Stalker runs the database, too, that you can go on and see what kind of sightings are out there. So they give a lot of information, I think, and
that makes
look
sense.
At some of the other UFO websites.
They don't really want to get into the politics of it. They just want to get the information out there to who
right.
wants it.
I think that's a great way of saying it. Yes, mm-hmm. And if you look at some of the other websites that are out there, they don't give out a lot of information. So I think MUFON does a pretty good job.
Well, no, and most of the government programs, you know, they've been talking about how they fully intend to continue studying this, but will not disclose any of the information to the public.
Yeah.
So, you know, that doesn't help us either. So, you know, I think MUFON does a great job, and there's a reason why they've been around this long. So
right.
They're very well respected in their field. So, I mean, they pretty much invented it. So,
don't forget the chapters. I mean, each chapter does a great job on their own.
Yep.
Try and get speakers in and stuff. So it's not just national. It's also a very grassroots effort. Each state has a chapter, and they're all doing disclosure on their own level by presenting what they know as evidence in their state.
That's cool. I hadn't thought about it that way. But yeah, you're right. That's interesting. And so anybody can just show up and go to like the monthly meeting. Like I'm in Texas right now. I could go to in one of the monthly meetings. Is that the case?
Anyone can show up to our meetings. Each chapter runs them differently. I can't speak to how Texas will run their meetings. Mm-hmm. I do know that they're very inviting and they do allow the public to go to them. But I can speak more for Connecticut since that's my chapter.
Sure.
Anyone can go to our meetings. We have a lot of members that are paid members of MUFON, so meaning they actually have a membership to the organization.
Yes.
Some come to experience it, see if they like it, see if they like the people. and then they join. For me, I think the goal is really to get the information out there.
Yeah.
So what, if you can afford it to join, great. It helps the organization. If you can't and you can join later on, that's fine too. But more importantly, you're meeting people of like-minded, like-mindedness. And for some of these people, you know, they've experienced things and they just want to talk to someone.
Yeah.
They feel very isolated. They've had a sighting experience or an abduction and they're holding it inside. And I can't tell you how many times people have come to our meetings and they meet some of our other members and they just tell their whole story and the weight of the world is off of them because they're like, finally, I've met people that think like me. Finally, I don't feel like the odd duck out because, you know, I told my husband, I told my wife or whoever,
yeah,
and they just laugh at me. They just think, oh, that's silly.
Absolutely.
When you come to our meetings, they're like, I found my people. And it just is like an amazing experience. And I think you could say that's probably the case at most of the chapter meetings around any MUFON organization chapter
okay.
meeting.
So why do you think the government is dead set against getting this info out there? Why are they trying to, you know, inhibit disclosure? Like, why are they trying to prohibit disclosure from coming out?
That's a good question. And so one of our former members was in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a speaker today who was in the military. And they both basically said around the same answer. And is that they have... You know, a lot of the technology that we see in the skies is our stuff. You know, it's projects in the black budget world of the defense contractors or the military that they're working on and they're developing. And we see them testing it and they don't want to disclose it.
Is this stuff that they've reverse engineered from aliens?
Possibly.
Okay.
But what they also said is, if we have something that we don't really understand how it works completely,
right?
We don't want our enemies to find out how to use that technology and use it against us. Because they take their oath to defend the people and the country and the Constitution very seriously. And if they know they can't defend against this technology, they don't want it to be released that someone could hurt our country.
I can totally jive with that answer. The answer that I get a lot of times from people is, oh, the cabal is dead set. They don't want it out there. And, you know, this, that, and the other. And that's just not okay to me. You know, that's like what, because they want to control us with it. And it's
right.
Like, no. But what you're saying actually makes a lot more sense. It's not some sinister thing. It's, you know, they're kind of trying to protect us, actually. So I like that answer.
I mean, yeah, I think that's. I mean, you can get into the conspiracy sides if you want to call it that, or the truth side if you believe in that with the cabal. I mean, you can go down that path.
Rabbit hole if you want to.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a better way to say it. You're right. You can go down that rabbit hole if you want. And I have, and I do. I like I like that line of thought. I mean, there's some truth to it. But I think to answer your question, at least after today with our speaker who was in the Navy, you know, he's like, well, if these things are coming in and out of our battle groups, in and out of our airspace, and we can't stop them, you know, we can't defend against that. So we're going to keep it quiet until we can figure out how to counter it. And I think it says a lot for our men and women in uniform that they will keep that secret because they feel it protects us.
Definitely.
So,
yeah.
You
know. Well, I definitely like that answer. Well, where do you stand? Have you had any personal experiences that have led you to believe? Have you seen any UFOs or, you know, had alien contact? Or
I have. Well, I thought I had two sightings in my life, and I debunked them both as aircraft. I actually found the actual aircraft through looking at radar and the time and date, and that's what I saw. So I haven't actually seen a UFO. However, after doing this for... Since 2011, I've done investigations of abductions. I've done over 200 sightings in investigations in Connecticut and around the world as part of CAG International Case Assistance Group.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of commonality. There's a lot of there's a lot of evidence, in my opinion, that we are not alone. And that's not even going into, like, the videos you see on YouTube that are deemed credible, and I'm doing air quotes on that, or the whistleblowers that come out, or any of the research by some of the more prominent UFO researchers out there and their evidence. That's not even that. If you don't even include any of that, just being a field investigator, I cannot see how we are not alone or not being visited.
Yeah, I mean, even the Drake equation was the big thing for me that was like, okay, that really puts into perspective showing you like a scientific formula for, you know, okay, how many planets are out there, how many galaxies, how many could have habitable life, you know, and then on and on to show you the percentage. And it was something like 59%, you know, positive that there is intelligent life beyond us. I was like, all right, that works, yeah. You know, and then, yeah, I've since had two experiences, that I believe to be very real, but, I'm still trying to debunk them myself because I'm, you know, it's that whole thing. It's like, okay, this can't be right. Like this can't be. I'm a very rational person. I always try to think everything through to the nth degree. So I don't know. We'll see. But what's the most exciting case that you've worked on for the organization, would you say?
Well, it's two. One was a triangle. It was a triangle craft in the next town over from where I lived. It was, because I live in Connecticut, and this was in the next town over. And it was a retired Marine who saw it. He just finished his service in the
military. Oh, I read about this. Yeah.
And he was in downtown. In the downtown area, and he saw it out of the corner of his eye, this triangle that just went right over his head. And I mean, you can't get a more credible witness. He was just in theater because he just finished his tour in Afghanistan. He just got discharged from the military. He knew the planes that we had. And then when we were looking at the radar, not just the commercial radar sites where, you know, you can go on and track planes, but we were looking at all the information to get more detailed radar. There was just nothing in the sky that night. And Connecticut has very busy skies. You know, we have planes coming up the East Coast. We have planes coming over the East Coast, down the East Coast, so up and down the East Coast, meaning like they're going – you know, they're going over to Europe, basically, or they're going over Connecticut up over the pole into Asia. We have planes going to Boston. We have them coming in and out of New York. It's a very crowded sky.
Absolutely.
And the night of this triangle, there was just like nothing. And the few planes that were there were on the far corners of the state, on the Connecticut, Rhode Island side, and the Rhode Island, the Connecticut, New York side. And
did he say whether it did an illogical pattern? Because I noticed that with the ones I saw, the way that it moved was just not the way something.
No, it was just slow and steady, and it didn't make a sound. And it was the typical triangle sighting. It had the white dot light on each corner. It had the red light on the center, right under the craft. And there was it was low enough to the ground where he could see. There was no rivets like you see on a plane. Really? There
so was one of ours
no that, windows.
That we've, engineered, right? Because there's rivets. So, okay. Interesting.
So if you were to look at a commercial plane like a Delta or American, any plane, you'll see the little rivets.
Yeah.
There was none. It was completely smooth. There was no windows for a cockpit where the pilots would be.
Wow.
And the question is, well, who can move planes? Who can clear? Who has the ability to clear an entire sky? Well, it would be the FAA and, you know, the military or who. So that was a really interesting case because it was just, you have this credible witness who's just staring at this thing going over its head. And then you look at the radar data, and where on a normal day and time of this evening, it would be filled with planes going over to Europe, there was just nothing. There was just this wide, like it reminded me that the best way I could describe it is they wanted to clear the airspace so no one could see this thing coming. Right. And it was like at 11 something at night, 11:30 at night. So it was as late as you can get where hopefully like no one will be around. And it was a great sighting. It was really good. And that always stuck in my head, and it still sticks in my head.
Well, it's interesting. I'll have to send you the footage I have of what I saw out in Lehigh. And I found out about a couple of weeks after the sighting that I lived, this is when I was living in Lehigh, Utah. I lived about 1.5 miles away from the NSA, that top secret NSA base out there.
Wow.
That's like dedicated to, I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but there's nothing out there either. Like, and, you know, I looked for satellites and things like that. I don't have access to the detailed radar that you guys do, but you know,
don't either. We have to do freedom of information requests. You know, that's another thing people think, that like MUFON has access to FFA, and we don't. We have to do freedom of information requests and go through the channels and all the proper procedures. We're not dialed in, so sometimes that disappoints people if we can't get the radar data. Or, you know, I always tell people, especially people that are interested in becoming field investigators,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to be Scully and Mulder out there running around. It's, you know, that's a TV show.
Yeah.
Reality is a lot different. You're using the public domain to figure out what you're seeing. And there's some other websites, and, you know, some people are retired police. Some people are retired federal agents. I mean, MUFON runs the gamut of people that are investigators and members, mm-hmm. and they do bring a variety of resources to the table, and we can utilize that with photo analysis and video analysis and radar analysis. There's a guy that specializes in that, but it's still the old grunt work of we have to go out and try and get the evidence ourselves. It's not given to us. Or it's not like we can call up on our computers and have access to all the data. Although we would love to, but I don't think the government's ever going to allow that.
Yeah, allow that. Yeah. Well, what state has the highest amount of activity, and have there been any UFO flaps anywhere in the last 20 years?
California and Florida and Pennsylvania are usually in the top three.
Is that just because of sheer size? Because you think Texas would be up there too, but
yeah, but Texas is a lot of is not, you know, you have a lot of open spaces in between towns. Florida, California, they're very congested. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, LA, for example, there's a lot of air traffic. You know, the one thing that's tough is that, you know, some sightings are man-made. They're IFOs. You got to remember also that UFOs stands for unidentified flying object.
Right.
Hollywood has related UFOs with aliens.
Right.
But it really just means it's a craft that we don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Until we figure out what it is. Now, it might be UFOs, it might be aliens, but it might be a classified military craft. And California has a lot of testing facilities. They have a lot of commercial aircraft. Same with Florida.
Area 52 that most people don't know about. Or
yep, Area 51. Yep. So,
no, 52, Dugway Proving Ground.
Oh, yes, yeah. You're right. Area 52. Well, yeah, there is that.
Yeah, because a lot of people, I've spoken with a lot of people out there, because when I lived out in Utah, we took a trip out there, and it says you'll be shot if you come anywhere near it. And the locals were all telling us, yeah, that weird stuff happens all the time there. They see UFOs all the time, and there's all the sorts of very strange occurrences there.
Well,
so they're testing, you know, crafts there and things like that.
Well, Popular Mechanics, I think it was Popular Mechanics, or Popular Science, one of them, they had an article a few years ago about the Utah base, Area 52, mm-hmm. That there might actually be the new Area 51, because Area 51 has become so commercialized with tours going to it and television shows and people watching it that they needed someplace more private, so they actually moved most of the stuff there. Although now Area 51 is still very active, so the question is maybe they have two, maybe they have one. But, you know, there's a good point on that is a unique location.
I mean, we were almost arrested when we went out there, and we were way far away. And we went up on this hill to watch over. And then, you know, of course, you know, military police comes up there. What are you doing here? We're like, we're just, you know, just camping out. And he's like, get out of here. You know, and it was just weird. It's like, well, why? What's the problem? Like, well, we can't see anything up here. We're just camping. And so it was just, it was very strange. And we interviewed a lot of the locals who had a lot of interesting things to say, and they were all similar. You know, not everybody got, there's no way everybody got together to get the same story, you know? So I don't know. I agree with you on that. So who would you say is the most believable story and the most credible when it comes to all the public UFO cases? I'm, you know, partial to Sherry Wilde, Travis Walton, and then of course, Betty and Barney Hill.
I actually like, Travis Walton.
He looks like such a nice guy too.
I met him twice at a conference, and he's a very down to earth guy. I took him as kind of a shy guy.
His story is not lying too. Something shook him up, and it's
He's been vetted by everyone you can imagine. If they were to find holes in a story by now, you would think they would have found it, and they haven't. So I think he's a very credible witness.
Does he speak often at symposiums and stuff still? Or
he does make the circuit, yes. I mean, the UFO circuit. He is around. Like I said, I saw him twice. There's a new movie out with Travis Walton. I think you probably get that on the internet.
Okay. We saw the fire in the sky, and it was heart wrenching. You know, imagine being in that situation, and nobody believed him, and that would be terrible. But I'll have to check that out.
So I think he is probably what I would say is
the incredible. Most
incredible.
I like Sherry Wilde too, because she lost a lot, you know, her family, her kids, even by telling her story. And it's just kind of like, and she, you know, I found out about Sherry Wilde from Dolores Cannon's stuff. So, I mean, I relate to her story quite a bit. But so what do you think about Dr. Greer and about his claim on, you know, the government staging the false flag alien invasion? Do you think that's possible?
I suppose it's possible. I mean, I don't know if he's... I don't like to speak negative about anyone.
Sure, go ahead. I mean...
I guess it's possible. If that's what he believes, then more power to him. If he has the evidence in the documentation to support that, then great. If he's just saying that because he believes it, well, I don't know. But I do respect him. I think his disclosure movement is
fantastic.
Fantastic. Yeah. It's done a lot to bring this to the forefront. And
what a lot of people forget too is that 2 days before 9/11, he had that major press conference about disclosure and had all of these people that he was calling out.
Right, and you can see that on YouTube if anyone of your listeners want to go and see that.
Exactly. I'll post a link, guys, in the description at the end. But it's interesting to watch because this was a big deal. And then 9/11 just mysteriously happened 2 days later. I mean, you know, I'm not one for conspiracies, but, you know, take that for whatever you want to.
Well, 9/11 is another rabbit hole.
Exactly. That press conference was pretty, you know, convincing.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I respect him for what he's trying to do to bring this closure to happen. And I've seen his videos. They're very well done. He has a lot of good points in his videos. Anyone that tries to move the field forward with evidence and in a positive way, I think deserves credit. It's the people that try and bring it back with negativity that I don't really respect. And, you know,
personal gain, like that's, you know, to make money off of that. I don't buy that.
So, I do respect him for that, and I think it's great that he's trying to move the field forward. So.
Yeah, I agree. Do you meditate and do you try to connect with higher intelligences, or is that not your bag at all?
I'm trying to get I try to meditate. One of my members now is very much into remote viewing, and he's into manifesting.
Uh-huh.
And he's trying to get me into that. So I've been starting small with trying to learn to put my mindset in the manifesting mode, where you get your whole, you change your outlook. I mean, you try to change your energy.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that by doing that, by becoming more, realizing I'm part of a bigger picture, that will in turn meditate a little bit better.
Yep.
I'm not there yet. I'll be honest with you. It's a change for me because I've always been more of the science nuts and bolts. Like, let's go look at the evidence. You know, the energy and the, you know, as some will say, the pie in the sky stuff. I never was there yet. Now I am, but I'm like at the baby steps. I'm learning. I'm like I'm like if you were to use a child, I'm a toddler who's now crawling, who hopefully will be able to walk and will eventually be able to run. So,
well, if I can make a suggestion, check out QHHT. It's a method developed by Dolores Cannon, and it is amazing. Those meditations are so powerful that it'll change your life. I mean, you'll have visions of things that you're just like, what? You can't even explain them. And that's what really got me into meditating a lot. Like, I mean, I do it every day now because it just had such a profound effect on my life, like on my mood and everything else. So,
okay, I'll check it out. Definitely. Thank you for that.
No worries. Yeah. So I don't know if you've heard about this, but what are your thoughts on the Vril Society and Maria Orsic? Have you heard about that and how she channeled ancient aliens who helped them supposedly build a spaceship so they could ultimately leave Earth before the war ended in Germany, and then they were never seen or heard from again?
Yeah. Is it
fully faked or what? And that Adolf Hitler, she had ties to Adolf Hitler and on and on and on.
Well, that's a really good question. I've been reading Michael Salas's books on the secret space program, and he has a lot of good evidence talking about that. It makes sense, and the reason I think it makes sense is twofold. One, a lot of what he talks about in his books is verified in another book by Project Serpo.
Yeah,
it was like two different sources.
And the Law of One, if you've read that, Ra, which is, that's not an evidentiary thing. It's a channeled book, but still, they all coincide.
But the other thing is, after the war ended, we had Operation Paperclip, and we're bringing all these Nazi scientists, and a lot of them you can find talk about aliens being involved with creating. I think even Von Braun, I don't remember the quote off the top of my head, but it was to paraphrase it, he was asked, like, who helped you build all this? He says, well, we had help, and they weren't from Earth, basically, is kind of what he said.
The Draco is basically what he said,
If he knew about it and the Vril Society was there, then yes. And they say that the Vril Society funded him. I think it's
stuff goes a little too far for me, like that they're still Adolf Hitler's still alive living in inner Earth or was or whatever. That goes a little too far for me, but the Vril Society sounds pretty legitimate to me.
Well, if you believe William Tompkins, he wrote in Salas's second book, he said that when he was in the defense contracting world, he said that there was Nordics working there, and one of them looked just like the leader of the Vril Society. So, maybe they were helping both sides.
That's interesting.
It's interesting indeed. As for, like you said, Hitler's still alive, is living in inner Earth, Antarctica. Those are all, you can call them parts of ufology. You can call them the conspiracy realm. I mean, you can take that any way you want. And people have very strong opinions on both sides of that coin.
Yeah, and I think it's important, I just want to mention this to the listeners, to, you know, gather your own information. This podcast is meant to, you know, shine some light on what's going on and what's out there, but don't take everything we say as gospel. Go and learn for yourself and make your own opinion, you know?
And, you know, the other thing I would add to that is there's a lot of junk on the internet. You know, there's unsourced documents, there's fakes, there's, you have to use academic rigor and academic standards to try and find some good stuff. If you're looking, not to plug us again, but if you go to our website, mufonct.com, I created a link that says research, and it has a whole bunch of questions to ask when you're looking at books, for example, like, how do I know what book is the right book for me? There's books there. There's suggestions on books. So go there. Use that as a starting guide. And then if a book has a bibliography or a footnotes, usually they'll cite their sources, then use that to find your next set of books, and then so on and so forth. A good researcher will tell you their sources. A bad researcher will just use anonymous and unnamed sources, and that doesn't stand in academic rigor, and it shouldn't stand in ufology.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. And it's not helpful to actually further anything, you know, and to keep this, you know, going. So, and to actually at some point hopefully come to a determination on what's happening. Now, I have a question. So do you think that, in your opinion, and maybe you could also tell me, Mufons, do you think that generally alien civilizations are benevolent or malevolent? Like,
well, I'll tell you my opinion. I think alien civilizations run the gamut with Earth. I think there are some that are completely indifferent to us. Mm-hmm. We're like ants to them. You know, they're so advanced that they don't need to give us the time of day. I think there's others that want to use us for their own purposes. Mm-hmm. And I think there's others that are seeing that we're being exploited and maybe trying to help us stop it. And then you can, where it gets a little tricky is who are the ones that are helping us. Well, some say the Nordics, some say the Nordics are bad, some say the Nordics are good, some say the reptilians are bad, some say the reptilians are good. I mean, it's a gray area. I mean, everyone says something different, and it's the one thing kind of bothers me about ufology is there's never really consensus sometimes.
But yeah, there's never really just a short, you know, sweet answer to anything, is there?
There's not. No. I mean, so I think the how aliens treat us and view us, I think, runs the complete spectrum to the ones that, like I said, don't care about us. We're just, if we stay in our own little solar system, we don't mess around with the rest of the galaxy. Mm-hmm. They're like, we'll leave you alone. And there's others that are like, well, we got our own agenda. We're going to use you for our pawns. So,
well, so I also believe that many, many extraterrestrials came down to Earth at one point because when we started developing nuclear technology, they went, uh-oh, you know, like there were no danger here. So they, tried to come down to kind of try to save us or elevate us or, you know, help us get our,
or just make sure we didn't destroy ourselves or the universe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
absolutely. I think that's a valid point. I mean, that would explain why there's so many UFO sightings around military installations. So they're keeping an eye on our nuclear weapons and our nuclear ability. So I think that gets back to how they view us.
That gives you a good feeling, kind of, that somebody's looking out for us in that regard. But, you know, how do you think, what can an individual do? How can they do their part for the organization, for MUFON, and for disclosure as a whole? Just besides reporting, you know, just making sure to report if they see something. What else can they do?
I think the biggest thing is education. Yeah. You know, right now, people don't really understand what ufology is. There are the people that think that, well, a lot of the average people, the average Joe, I think, thinks we're the ones running around with tinfoil hats on our heads.
Yeah, Yeah, and they laugh at you when you're trying to legitimately study some serious information that, you know, I take very seriously. And that's always kind of disheartening, because it's like, well, how are we supposed to find out anymore if we just laugh about it, you know?
Right.
So I like that you said that. Education.
So get educated. Learn about ufology. Learn about the different fields. There are many ways. There's many avenues you can go down. And we talked about some of them today. You know, you can look at aliens. You can look at abductions. You can look at Antarctica. You can look at secret space program. I mean, you just do regular sighting investigations. I mean, there's all kinds of gamuts. But
doesn't MUFON have a university now? Kind of a, or are they finished?
No, they have a MUFON university. You can take classes through there.
Okay.
And you can learn. Our field investigators go through that training through MUFON University, where they learn how to become field investigators.
And they also learn the history kind of some things and whatnot, right?
Right.
So, yeah.
And also, they get a field investigator manual. There'll be a history in there as well. But you can also, if you want to know more about MUFON as an organization and its history, you don't need to sign up for that right away. You can go to their website and go to About Us. I mean, there's plenty of information on MUFON's own website to talk about them. You can go to our website, MUFONCT.com. You can learn about us and link over. There's a lot of resources out there for people to learn about us. And then
I went to the CIA, the Freedom of Information Act, all the stuff that's been, you know, disclosed, that had to be disclosed. So I found some interesting stuff there. So,
right.
You know, yeah, you just got to kind of do your research kind of all over the place. And you can go down rabbit holes, but I think trying to stay just on task, just to try to get the basic understanding of it before you make a decision, I think is the best way. And yeah, I think Michael agrees on that. Can you tell me what traits are stereotypical for somebody who's had contact or been abducted, not just seen, you know, a craft, but who's actually had a contact or been abducted and on a ship?
There's two types. Mm-hmm. Some people that are abducted or seen are scared. They're confused, frightened. If they've been abducted and the aliens have done something to them, they have trauma, like, you know, traumatic event. So the trauma that would happen with a traumatic event, maybe that's PTSD, maybe it's not. You need a professional diagnose that, is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
And then you have the other spectrum where they had a very enlightened experience. They had positive contact with the aliens. They have kind of found their place in the universe. They've learned more about the universe. They have a greater understanding of our role in the universe. So you run the gamut. There's the enlightened experience where it was the best thing that ever happened to them. They're completely at peace with it. In fact, if they were not a very peaceful person mentally or physically or emotional before, after the abduction, they are, because in a way they kind of found the answers that they were always looking for. And then you have the other extreme, that is they're completely terrified, they're scared, they're traumatized.
About people suffering from radiation poisoning or loss of time and things like that? Do you find that that's typical too?
That has happened. You know, I worked a case in Connecticut. It happened in the 80s, and it was with a state trooper and a regular gentleman. And they were looking at a UFO in a pond, and they only thought 10 minutes went by that they were looking at this craft. And it turned out 2 hours have gone by, and no one knew where they were. They were like, "Where were you for 2 hours?" Well, we have no idea. So they didn't think they were gone for 2 hours. So there is sometimes a loss of time. With this radiation, I haven't worked any cases with radiation, but it's in our field investigator training to look for radiation. When I've gone to, I shouldn't say I haven't worked. I haven't had anyone test positive for radiation.
Okay.
When I have gone to do investigations of abductees at their house or the location of the abduction. We do have a radiation detector, so we do check for that. Mm-hmm. Because, like you said, there are radiation element to an abduction, possibly.
Right.
And it is in our training, but I have not had anyone test positive for that. But yes, we do look for it.
I was reading a short story about, I can't remember, an older gentleman who had seen, a UFO that came close enough to him to be able to identify some things. And he shortly died several days later, and that this had happened, I don't know, a couple of other times with a couple of other people. So,
when was that? Because, in the 1950s.
Yeah, it was, I think this was like the 80s.
Well, the military was trying to use...
scare tactics.
No, they were trying to use nuclear power engines for aircraft. And you can Google that. They attempted it. Stanton Friedman talked a little bit about that. They never quite got it to work, supposedly, and I put that in quotes. I mean, I don't know what happened.
Right.
And some people that have sort of like craft in the sky develop radiation poisoning. Maybe it's because of that. I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying that it's one example of how, unless we know what they're doing in the military and the black budget world of these secret projects, you don't really know. It's one question mark you can't always check off.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I know MUFON investigates the Mothman, and I've recently heard of his appearance in a couple of other states, and prior to some tragedy happening. Have you heard about that, and can you speak more about it at all?
I'm not really involved with the Mothman investigation, so I don't have much to add on that, unfortunately. I know about Mothman and who he is and about the famous sightings of the Mothman, but I don't really do much with MUFON and the Mothman.
Okay. But MUFON, correct me if I'm wrong, does also deal with humanoid encounters too, not just...
They do look at cryptozoology a little bit. We do have a guy who is... one of our state directors who would oversee it. So if there is a cryptozoology case that came along, chances are it would go to this individual.
Oh, okay. Okay. Is there any spot in the U.S. that has the highest amount of sightings anywhere in the world, like that people could visit, I guess, if they wanted to see something? Is there one spot that's kind of just known for it?
Off the top of my head, I can't think of one. I know that I'll probably think of it after the podcast, but I'm drawing a little bit of a blank at the moment, so I can't. I don't know.
From my experience, any place remote, and any people that I've talked to that have had that, and I believe have had actual real sightings, it's always somewhere remote where nothing else is really around, and. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's because they don't want to be seen by anyone else or what it is. But, I don't know. What are your thoughts on the CSETI program, the CSETI protocol for contact developed by Dr. Greer?
Well, we're thinking about trying that within our own organization. So I like it. I think it's a good idea. It's using...
it works really well. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So I know two individuals in the state that do it personally, that do it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And they have had positive results.
We run
Skywatches in our state, and we are going to try that for one of our Skywatches in the future. So I think it's a good idea. I think it's a great technique to add to your toolkit of sightings to try and increase your sighting ability to see a craft or an entity. Mm-hmm. And like I said before, anything that can move the field forward is a good thing, in my opinion.
Exactly. Yeah, and I found that it, I've only done it three or four times, but out of the three or four times, one of the times was when I did, and three other people were there that saw something too. So it was unmistakable. So Yeah, but what do you think crop circles are really? And do you believe that they are made by aliens or that they're hoaxed?
Well, I saw it. I think.
Or both.
They're both. I think some of them are hoaxed. There was a TV show on the Discovery Channel that showed, I don't know if you've seen it, it was like three MIT students, and they had to recreate a crop circle with all the characteristics of a crop circle in 24 hours.
The ones that are broken, the ones that are actually broken, not just bent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they did it.
Yep.
They recreated it. So it is possible. However, I think that there is more to it than that. There are some very good crop circles. And I was at a conference in Pennsylvania, and we had one of our state section directors who does a lot of research into crop circles, and she was talking, and she presented some very good evidence with radiation effects and electromagnetic effects, and that I don't believe can be replicated by hoaxing. And the complication, the complicated patterns of some of these crop circles, I don't think you can make in a day, and you would need to make them in a day. The time alone, I think, is the biggest example of why these probably are not always man-made. The simple ones, the very basic and generic ones, they could be man-made. You could maybe do them in a night. But there is a very many, many, many crop circles that are complicated with mathematical patterns in them or musical patterns to them. And exactly. I don't believe you can do that in a day.
Well, that's part of the C-SETI program has these high-pitched sounds that were taken from the crop circles, some of the crop circles in, I can't remember what place, but you're supposed to use that signal to draw them into you, kind of. And it's very strange that that was created at a crop circle, that people could hear those tones. And because there's no way to really hoax that, if you will, you know?
Right. And that might explain why that C-SETI protocol is so successful, because they're using the signals given to them by the aliens.
Exactly. What are your thoughts on Corey Good, and do you think there's any validity to his claims? I mean, I like him a lot, but there's something just, I feel like he's been taken in by the government and fed this information or something. I can't figure out what it is.
Well, I don't like to speak negative about people. I already mentioned that. I don't,
right.
I think he brings up a lot of points that are worth investigating.
Sure.
And yeah. Michael, I'm not trying to push Michael Salas's book. It's just, I like to quote sources, and it seems like all the questions are around him. When I read his first book, he had a lot of circumstantial evidence to support Corey Good and what he was saying. He was able to document cases. Corey Good spoke at a MUFON symposium when we did it back on the secret space program. His presentation was very good. Some of his stuff is a little out in left field, but as technology is becoming more advanced and our science fiction is catching up with our science, they're not really that far out there anymore.
Sure.
I guess it's possible. You know, I don't know. I think he is great for asking questions and having people look, because what is happening is, by trying to look into Corey Good, people are learning more about the secret space program and all this other technology.
I agree with that 100%. Yeah, and I think putting that on Gaia TV was an awesome thing to do, because a lot of people that wouldn't have normally you know, wanted to hear what he had to say, all of a sudden were watching it and intrigued. And
right.
Yeah. And if anything else, if he is wrong, you know, it's been a great story, because I was hooked, you know. I mean, I watched the whole like three or four first seasons. So, go ahead.
I think, you know, like anything, he has to be vetted. And as UFO, if as UFO researchers invent them, they'll find out what's going on. I have nothing against the guy, and I, you know, sure. Good for him for telling his story.
Yeah, I mean, because you guys also have to think that he's not a celebrity. Like, there's a lot of people that are after him for doing stuff like that. You know,
right.
And he's a very hated individual, which is sad because, you know, if you're truly telling your story, trying to get it out to help people, and then people are just making fun of you, that's got to be an awful feeling, you know?
Yeah, I think that'd be pretty tough.
Have you read Nick Redfern's book on the RH negative, The Bloodline of the Gods?
I'm reading it right now, actually.
Are you?
Yeah, I am. I'm about 20 pages into it. I think it's a good book so far, and it's a good question to ask and to look into.
Yeah, it really tripped me out because I'm RH negative, and I was just that, you know, I happened to pick that up, and then I forgot about it for a while. Then when I went to Park City last weekend, I brought it with me, and then I was just like, okay, this is very strange. So,
yeah. Well, I can't speak on it. I'm only 20 pages in, but ask me in a few weeks. I'll let you know.
Okay. And then kind of lastly, I know we've got like another minute here, but what about Stan Romanek's story? Because he obtained some mathematical knowledge that he could have never known. I mean, stuff that, you know, quantum physicists were like in awe, like, how did you get this? He had formulas, you know, and I know that some of it was hoaxed. He came out and said later on, yes, I did, you know, fake some of the stuff, but he still, you know, mandates that the rest of it was true. So, and I guess he did MUFON have people investigating him?
I believe MUFON investigated him. I'm not entirely sure on that, but, I'm always hard on people that come out and say, that come out with hoaxing, because credibility is huge in ufology. It's, you know, when you're dealing with witnesses that have no photographic evidence, no video evidence, they just are telling you what they saw, you have to vet them and see if they're credible. And if you start catching people in lies, how do you believe him? You know, their credibility is hurt. Maybe what he said is true, and that what you said is true with the mathematics, and it might be. It's good that he owned up to it, but this fact of the matter is he lied. And if he got lied and he said he hoaxed it, I think it taints everything. Unfortunately, even though it might be true, it's something that you, because witness credibility is so important. You have to have credibility. Once you lose that, you can't get it back. It's no different than if you're in a relationship with someone. If you lie to your partner, how do you trust your partner again? You know, how do you know that they're telling you the truth the second time, or the third time?
Yeah.
You don't. You just, so once that's lost, it's hard to get back. So that's my view on that.
Well, listen, I won't keep you too much longer. I thank you so, so much for coming on. This has been a really interesting conversation, and I'd love to catch up with you again maybe in 6 months and kind of, you know, see what new developments have come out. And
sure. Contact me in 6 months. We'll do it again. No problem. I look forward to it.
All right. Thanks so much again, Mike. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.